Few topics are more controversial than guns. This hour, we continue our summer series by going beyond Iowa Nice in the gun debate. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. First, we'll hear some of the latest data on gun violence, trends in gun purchases, trends in gun deaths and injuries, and what that may mean. Then we'll hear from an Iowa gun advocate who's lobbied the legislature so his young daughters could use handguns, and with a state representative who lost his son to gun violence. Where do you stand in the gun debate? Has your family been impacted by gun violence? Join our conversation. First, this hour's news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Few topics are more controversial than guns. This hour, we continue our summer series by going beyond Iowa Nice in the gun debate. It's River to River. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's fairly easy to agree that fewer gun deaths and less gun violence, those would be good things. Those are worthy goals, and most of us, if not all of us, can agree about that. It's that next step, getting Americans, Iowans, to agree on how to achieve those goals without infringing on individual rights. That's gotten us into some more difficult terrain. So this hour, we want to reacquaint ourselves with the problem, some of the latest big-picture data having to do with guns and gun violence, and then listen to various perspectives on different sides of the debate and go in search of some common ground actions that might be taken to improve the great problem we have with gun violence in this country. We'd like you to join us. We're also seeking the perspectives of everyday Iowans. Maybe you have a strong belief, feeling when it comes to guns, gun legislation. Join our conversation this hour, 1-866-780-9100. You can email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining me first of all this hour is Bindu Kalesan. She is a research associate in preventative medicine and epidemiology at Boston University, a national researcher who's studied gun control and gun legislation, gun culture, I should say, and gun legislation. Bindu, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ben. Good to be here.
Set the scene for us as we start this hour, the big picture in terms of data related to gun violence. What are you seeing out there that stands out?
Well, what's more important with gun violence is that, you know, the conversation has been solely around gun deaths. So it is important to have that conversation around gun deaths because most of the injury-related deaths are, the case fatality is between 3 to 5%, whereas in gun violence, the case fatality rate is about 30%, which basically means that 30% will die right away when they have an injury when they're shot. However, there is a 70%, which is, you know, a non-fatal injuries related to gun violence. They survive, but they're not really all heroes for just surviving. It's just because they don't have any other choice other than to survive, but they live with continued injury through their lifetime, and that means multiple hospitalizations, multiple mental and physical illnesses, which they have to endure and also put their families through it. So when we look at gun violence as such, we see a picture of, okay, from during the 21st century, a lot of gun deaths, and we see that, and it's endemic in the society, which means that the gun death rates have remained constant from 2000 onwards until 2014. And that makes us feel like, okay, we can't do anything about that. But once we understand that this added burden of injury due to non-fatal injuries, we see that it's clearly an epidemic. That means that the whole gun violence epidemic is driven by these non-fatal injuries, which are actually increasingly alarmingly high.
Mm-hmm. And what's behind those non-fatal injuries? Does your research tell you that?
Well, we still have to understand a lot more on that because currently that data in its individual patient level data is not really readily available. So What we know is that there's a 30% of them die, right? The case fatality rates. And then there's another 30% who go into, who survive the injury, they go into ER, they get patched up, and they are discharged. Then there's another 40% who will be taken to the hospital for a prolonged hospitalization time because of the increased severity of injury. And it depends on, you know, where they are shot. So let's say they're shot in the arm, that means you could have a fracture, and then the related consequences are different as opposed to whether they're shot in the abdomen, which might lead to them losing their spleen, losing their organs, and then coming back for multiple hospitalizations.
Mm-hmm. As an important footnote here, Bindu, I'd like to have you tell us about the state of research and funding research on gun and gun violence in this country. It's something that a lot of people are not aware of, is it? Is that there is no allowed national funding to research what you're doing?
It's not really that straightforward. So CDC is not allowed to do any sort of advocacy related to gun violence, which they have interpreted as there's no gun violence research. But at the same time, they've begun to start doing that in different ways. So from 2013 onwards, it's been a little bit relaxed. So what CDC does currently is that they have a little bit of money from President Obama, and what they've done is they've reinforced the National Violent Death Registry system, where they started collecting individual patient data on all the violent deaths. So that is, again, restricted to deaths alone. However, when, you know, I've used data from that resource, they do not actively collect gun ownership data. Which means, you know, our research is not really complete without such crucial information.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also provide surveillance. That means from 1981 until 2014, they give us data, mainly aggregate level data, which means the total numbers. You know, real research should be done with individual patient level data, which is really hard to get. CDC does allow us, it's actually available online for anyone to use. We can query a certain database and find the fatal and the non-fatal injuries related to gun violence.
Talk about some of the other research you've done, Bindu, before we also welcome some other guests here.
Yes.
You've examined gun culture, social gun culture.
Yes. So for us, it was important to understand, you know, this has been an ongoing problem. Right, so we see this. We already saw this epidemic of gun violence, and then why is it so? So, in order to understand that, any research is better when we understand why. And therefore, we thought, okay, well, let's look at the prevailing gun culture. So, we did a small study of 4,000 people. We surveyed it, so which means it's a cross-sectional level data, and we found that. People who are, you know, there's a strong relationship between gun ownership and experiencing gun culture. So, which means that we found quite a large increase where social gun culture, so those who experience social gun culture is more likely to own guns and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. And roughly a third of Americans own guns.
Exactly. If you look at it overall, you know, when you look at nationally, about 29% of U.S. adults reported that they own guns. Mm-hmm. But however, when you look at by state to state, differences are really very varied. So you can have about 5.2% of ownership reported in Delaware as compared to 61.7% reported in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Do you have the stats on Iowa there, for instance? Somewhere in the middle.
So I'm going to look up. Oh, Iowa reported 33.8%.
So pretty much right in the middle. When we talk about, we would all like to reduce gun violence, gun deaths and injuries. Does your research yield any information, any hints, ways that we can identify major barriers we need to get past to improve upon where we are today?
Yeah, well, we've identified a few, but that's not the whole picture. We need a lot more research to understand this a little bit better. First of all, we have a complex situation of multiple laws, right? And these laws are implemented differentially in different states. So, and also there are reciprocity between these states, which basically can nullify these restrictive laws or the permissive laws. For example, guns can go from one state to another very easily as compared to, you know, it's almost like having porous borders. It's like air pollution. So most of the laws just get nullified. For example, in California, you know, even though they have a lot of restrictive gun laws, the guns come in from the neighboring states, which are implicated in all the crimes in California. So there are several problems with just studying policy research alone. However, policies are not the only thing that we need to be concerned about, right? So what we want to do is reduce the public health burden related to gun violence in terms of both deaths as well as non-fatal injuries. In order to do that, the best way is to understand both sides of the problem. So we have a strong gun culture. So can we try and do something in public health when we completely disregard that whole gun culture phenomenon?
Mm-hmm.
No, that cannot be the case.
Okay,
so
we need to
understand a lot more.
Okay. Bindu Kalesan is with us, Research Associate in Preventative Medicine and Epidemiology at Boston University, a national researcher studying the gun culture, gun legislation, a little bit of what she's doing there. Let's move on and get those perspectives to understand the different sides in our search for some common ground here. I'm joined now by Nathan Gibson. He's with us in our Des Moines studio. He's a gun owner who's been on this show before, a gun advocate, a hunter, and a father. In fact, an Iowa gun advocate who has lobbied our legislature here in Iowa so that his young daughters could use handguns. Welcome back to the program, Nathan Gibson.
Hey, thanks for having me on today.
Also with him in the studio is a representative in our legislature, Representative Akeo Abdul-Samad, a Democratic representative and founder of Creative Visions. We'll find out about that, more about it. I'll just say that it's a nonprofit that addresses the use of drugs, gang violence, and crime involving at-risk youths. And Representative Akeo Abdul-Samad has had a son who died from gun violence in 1997. Representative Abdul-Samad, welcome to the program as well.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, especially on such a topic that is plaguing our country at this time.
Mm-hmm. Nathan Gibson, we want to go between you and help as our representatives of two very different perspectives, we think. Nathan, tell me a little bit about why you feel you needed to lobby to have your young daughters use handguns, which is prohibited right now. What is so important about that? What are you defending there? What do you want to change?
So there's a couple aspects to that. I'll speak about my personal aspect to it. I'm a hunter. I have guns in the house, and while I follow all the rules that a good, you know, gun owner follows, I don't leave my guns out unattended. I don't leave them loaded so my children, you know, can have easy access to them. I also recognize an early, you know, age, looking, you know, and seeing the headlines about those unfortunate accidents, I was very concerned also about, you know, I'm human. I could make a mistake. I could, you know, get busy, forget something. So I wanted to double up my efforts on teaching my kids about these guns, killing the curiosity, so to speak, letting them go out and shoot it and understand both the fun that we can have with them as far as hunting and sport shooting, but also the dangers associated with it. And for me, to prevent, you know, accidents, the best way is knowledge, teaching, and education. And I can no longer do that in the state of Iowa. I'm actually a felon for trying to teach my kids about gun safety from my perspective.
So what do you say to those who feel that fewer guns, more gun control legislation is a key to reducing our epidemic of gun violence?
Fewer guns is not going to reduce the epidemic because there's laws already on the books, laws currently today that prevent bad people from getting guns, and they obviously don't follow laws. So when you create laws like this that impact me, it actually hurts the situation more because, you know, deaths that result from outside of violence, that result from, you know, accidents and stuff that could be prevented with education, we actually have laws that are you know, in my opinion, amplifying the ability for somebody to get hurt.
So what do you feel is driving our current gun violence epidemic?
So, Yeah, chiefly, let's take, for example, there were 6 million federal checks, background checks done, I don't know, 2 years ago is the latest numbers that I could pull up, right? And let me make it clear, everyone right now on the radio is listening, you have to go through a federal background check to buy a gun. There's no gun show loophole. There's nothing. Anybody who sells a gun to anybody has to go through a background check, right? So there were 6 million of them done by the FBI. Of that, 80,000 were denied, right? So that is criminals trying to buy a gun, 80,000. We have less than a 1% conviction rate on those 80,000 that were denied. So we're not enforcing existing gun laws right now. We know that there are bad people trying to get guns, and we're not going out and trying to enforce those. Task force, you know, funding for police, whoever it may be, to go out and target these criminals that are getting guns and doing gun violence with them. Instead, we're trying to add more laws on that impact the law-abiding citizens more than it impacts the criminals. So that is our chief problem, is we're not accurately enforcing criminal, you know, the actual laws that are on the book.
Okay. I want to get Representative Abdul Samad in here. You'll have other time, time to talk Nathan Gibson, but I want to make sure that we're paying attention to time and giving everybody a fair shake at the limited time that we have here. Representative Akeo Abdul Samad, you lost your son to gun violence almost 20 years ago, and I'm sure that time it does not lessen the pain that it causes you and your family. Can you tell us a little bit about the circumstances of that death?
Well, I think to the point that when we're talking about gun violence and we're talking about educating our children about gun is apples and oranges. You know, that's the first thing. Yep. My son was shot one night. Another young man shot him, and neither one of them should have even been around guns. Neither one of them should have even had access to guns, because the guns that were actually used on my son was not bought from a dealer. It was given to him by another adult, in fact. And I think that's when we're talking about gun violence, we have to draw a clear line of demarcation between, you know, just individuals having access to guns illegally and adults getting guns to kids, to a father who could buy one and actually teach his children how to hunt and the safety of that.
Okay, react to Nathan Gibson's point, though, that he thinks there are plenty of laws here just not being enforced.
Well, I think there's laws that's not being enforced, but we also know how easy it is to obtain a gun, you know, in this country and even in Iowa. You know, I have no problem with extensive background checks. I think we need to do that more. When we talk about what happened in Orlando and other areas, you know, we're talking about, you know, if an individual is on a no-fly zone, they should be on a no-buy zone. You know, you shouldn't be able to go buy a weapon. If an individual adult passes a gun to a child and that gun is used in a felony, then we should be able, just like in Connecticut and other states, that adult should be punished. That adult should suffer a different consequence, you know, for aiding and abetting. When we're talking about gun violence, I think we're also talking about, you know, just as a father, as Nate wants to educate his children, we need to have real conversations now and about what are we talking about? Because every father is not a Nate. Every father is not going to make sure the gun is locked up in the home. Everyone isn't going to make sure that their children are taught gun safety. Or if there's an issue with the child, you know, then no, the father's not going to do that. Mm-hmm. So we have to. We don't hold real conversation.
Representative Abdul Samad, just in the interest of time, you're in the same studio as Nathan Gibson. What is it that you think, based on what he's shared, that he doesn't understand, that he doesn't get about your position?
No, I think Nate gets my position. Yeah, I think against my position there. I think that when we're talking, that's what I'm saying, we have to be succinct about what we're really talking about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the gun violence itself, our father teaching his children how to use a gun. You know, I think it has to be comprehensive. I would like to see Nate and I get together and hold forums. You know, so we're showing that we're not talking about taking away somebody's, you know, Second Amendment right, but what we are talking about is curbing, gun violence. You know, when you look at, as quick because of time, when you look at the deaths that take place just on a weekend in Chicago, Illinois, these individuals didn't go buy the guns. They didn't go get a background check. You know, babies are dying because they happen to be collateral damage when you have individuals that's having a turf war, a drug war, you know, and guns are there. You know, those are the things we need to talk about. You know, on how do we stop that? How do we stop that type of gun violence? And I think Nate and others could come together rather than letting individuals separate us, you know, like we are fighting to take away someone's Second Amendment, but to come and talk, have the real conversation about gun violence itself in the communities that are having that problem.
Nathan Gibson, does that sound like a way forward for you as well to spearhead this in a common fashion?
I would think so, yes. So I, as an example, the representative's idea about the no-fly, you know, no-buy. No one argues, not a single gun owner is going to argue that, you know, a terrorist or somebody who means to do this country harm shouldn't have a gun, right? The problem that we have is this is a constitutional right, and there's no other constitutional right where you can have an unelected person take away a right, right? Everywhere else, it's a jury of peers that will ultimately judge you.
Just to challenge that a bit, we have the right to free speech, but you cannot yell fire in an auditorium full of people. So there is a restriction in the interest of public safety. How is it different?
And well, in this case, what you're talking about here is that somebody can just say, hey, I'm going to put you on a list and you don't get to speak at all, right? You don't get to exercise your constitutional right
but you could appeal that, though. You could appeal being put on that list.
No, there is not an appeals process right now. That's the problem. And if you know, Ted Grouty actually pulled that out very succinctly when he was asking the DHS about the processes, and she replied, there is no process, due process afforded to a U.S. citizen to get on the list and get off the list. So again, there's areas that we can. I think we agree on this. Another good area is mental health funding, right? Some of these people, I don't understand all the intricacies of the Iowa mental health thing, and to be honest, I don't want to, but I do know that that is an area that we need to focus on to help people to try and prevent some of these atrocities that happen. So there are areas. We just have to find a common ground between taking away a U.S. citizen's constitutional right and also protecting. And like he said, there's extremes that end up separating us, and I think there probably is some areas that we can work together and make some good progress without infringing on rights.
Representative Abdul Samad, we have a little less than a minute before we have to go to break. Respond to what Nathan Gibson said there, an example there.
You know, I think one of the best examples, you know, is what you just gave about the fire. But the thing is, if an individual is put on a list and is not allowed to fly because they were in danger the lives of individuals on a plane, they were in danger a city, you know, then that individual still should not be able to buy a gun until they're off of that list. That individual, you know, we have to look at public safety. We have to look at what is there. It's just like, to the point is, if I'm a felon, you know, and I come out of penitentiary, even though I've served 30 years, you know, I'm still not allowed to pick up a gun. You know, even though I supposedly have paid my debt to society because, especially if I committed a violent crime. Okay. We have to look at that. We have to start having some realistic conversations.
Stay with us, Representative Akeo Abdul Samad, and also we have Nathan Gibson with us and Bindu Kalesan from Boston University as we talk beyond Iowa Nice in our series in the debate about guns and gun violence. And where can we find common ground? What actions can be taken that the majority of people support and are politically feasible? We'll talk about that further when we come back. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Our summer series, Beyond Iowa Nice, continuing today with a look at the gun debate. Of course, in all the national gun debate with us, but looking at it more locally here in Iowa. Joining us to do that, Bindu Kalesan is a research associate in preventative medicine and epidemiology at Boston University, giving us some research that she's been doing on a level looking at the big data picture. Also, Nathan Gibson, a gun owner. He's been on our program before as an advocate of guns, a hunter, a father who has lobbied the legislature for increased gun rights. Kale Abdul-Samad, Democratic representative in our state legislature. And we want to invite you to join our conversation. 1-866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Where do you stand in this gun debate? Where do you see common ground to reducing the epidemic of gun violence in our country? Joining us now, John Lundell. He is the mayor of Coralville. Also retired deputy director of the Injury Prevention Research Center at the University of Iowa College of Public Health. Retired in December of 2015 after over 20 years of work there. Thank you very much for joining us, Mayor Lundell.
It's a pleasure to be here, Ben.
You are a local researcher who's examined guns in the larger context of public health. So we've been talking about legislative solutions, other solutions. What is the view from the community? How do you see this in terms of public safety from a community perspective?
Well, you know, I think that with the high profile events that have happened across this country recently and not so recently, it's clearly an issue that is in my community of Coralville, relatively small, 20,000 people, just like it is in the larger cities. And while I think the approaches based on the size of the communities may be different, I think there's a common goal of definitely the need to address it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so how are you working to address that problem? What are you looking into with your public health research?
Well, taking off my mayor's hat for a moment and putting on my researcher hat, you know, I think it's always important to paint the picture using some facts. And you know, that's one of the roles of our injury center at Iowa is to address these issues, including gun violence. And, you know, it's definitely true what the speakers have said, that firearm-related deaths and traumatic injuries from the firearms are going up in Iowa. There's a definite trend. There's a few ticks where years gone down a little bit, but the trend overall is up. I think that the listeners may be surprised to know that in Iowa, there over 200 people lose their lives due to firearms every single year. And that's a number that actually surprised me.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us any more behind that 200 losing their lives? How does that break down? What are the causes of these? What's behind those gun violence deaths?
Yeah, a little different twist from what we've had on the show so far. Listeners should know that of those over 200, 82% are due to self-inflicted firearm injuries. So in other words, suicides. And then 14% are the assaults and the homicides that are what we read about in the media.
Mm-hmm. So what does that tell you when you look at those statistics, surprising number of deaths, but also how it breaks down? What does that tell you about what is our problem?
Well, I think what it tells me is that suicide prevention is a much understudied public health issue in our state as it is in many states. And fortunately, there's some new programs that are just started in our state. Ben Dew mentioned the violent death reporting system. Iowa is one of the new states that just came on 1 year ago. And to collect information on all violent deaths in Iowa, whether they're self-inflicted or assault. And that's a program that where the Iowa Department of Public Health, in conjunction with our Injury Center at Iowa, collects information from not only death certificates, but medical examiner reports and criminal reports on each and every incident, and then ties those records together to give a much more complete picture of the individual incidents, whether it's toxicology, whether the victim or the perpetrator had a history of mental illness, for instance, just all the characteristics behind the particular incident. Mm-hmm. And you know, there are states that have been in the violent death reporting system much, much longer than Iowa. And for instance, Oklahoma has been very successful in addressing domestic violence-related homicides in their state using information from this program. Alaska is looking at veteran suicides. That's a high-profile issue. Oregon is looking at an issue that we have in our state too, and that is, surprisingly, suicides amongst older adults. We see a tick at the end of the age spectrum of suicides in older adults in our state.
Mm-hmm. Bindu Kalesan there, when you have the states reporting, such as Iowa, through the Iowa Violent Death Reporting System, tell us about that data. What does that help in, for instance, in your research? Where does it get us that we need to be in order to have better solutions for this problem?
Well, that data allows us to understand the problem. and also look at it in the temporal way. That means we can see whether, you know, how much of the burden of disease, of injury and death is attributed to firearm violence. And then we can also see whether it is reducing over time or is it increasing over time. So we can look at it from the state's perspective. We can also look at it from different age groups, in different age groups, as Mayor Lundell was saying, that, you know, in Iowa, most of them, majority, 80% or and above, are mostly due to suicides. And that is the case nationally, too. 60% of gun deaths are mainly due to suicides, and only about 35% are due to assault-related deaths, and then even fewer are related to unintentional gun injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So that it looks like to me that most of the national picture is sort of this, is mirrored in different states similarly. So Iowa is a very good example, but it looks like we do have the same kind of pattern. But at the same time, what it does not tell you is what are the other factors which drive that. Like, does having a gun in the house, that information is not available in this kind of data. So it'll be good to have that extensive data, mm-hmm. and it'll be great to have that data in the NVDRS system as well, mm-hmm. which is currently not there. And, of course, you know, if you're going to restrict that to just individual-level factors, we need to understand a little bit more based on the gun culture, right? And we also need to understand the social factors related. The state-level social factors.
With the idea of doing what with that? Once we understand it, then more people will be on board with crafting legislation? Is that
I guess so. Oh, so it can be legislation and also tailored programs. Yes. So, for example, in a state where it is where the gun suicides are much high, can you go in and do crime prevention programs? It will not work. Right? So in states where majority of the gun deaths are due to suicides, you have to tailor those programs into it's even better if we can tailor those programs to older communities, allowing the doctors to talk about having, let's say if a person is a gun owner and the doctor knows that and that doctor understands that that person's got some mental health issues, they might be able to talk to that person better in a sense that to try and prevent that kind of how to be careful about having gun around the house. Mm-hmm. So that could be an approach, but at the same time, currently what we don't have is that level of stratified or very tailored programs in each of these states and in each of these communities. So let's say if there's a community where there is very high gun culture. So, for example, it could be Maine in a hunting community. How can we prevent unintentional injuries in that community? So that program will be completely different from that of a suicide prevention program.
Mm-hmm. Nathan Gibson, are you on board with all this collection of data to try to get us further here? We're talking about hunters. You're a hunter.
Yeah, we want to understand the problem, right? And whatever information we can collect is valuable to understanding the problem. The issue or concern I have is the narrative that's used with that. So I think in the opening statement, the mayor had said, 200 results, deaths, results of guns, right? That's kind of a shock and awe thing. When you really break down the data, at least what I looked at in 2014, I don't know what year his data is from, there were 55 homicides in Iowa, 2014. One of those was done with a rifle, right? We can't even tell if it was an AR-15 or if it was a bolt action, whatever it may be. So my concern is what is the narrative, who's collecting that data and how they're going to present and deliver that data in a fair and balanced way. And my concern with the CDC is they don't necessarily do that. Like the definition of a child, they raise that all the way up to age 24, right? And they say, oh, all these kids died from guns last year. Well, they've got that defined as a kid all the way up to the age of 24. A majority of those are done in the big cities, and they're a result of gang violence. So for me as a gun owner, it looks like they're trying to push a particular narrative to say, hey, we've got a problem with guns in the United States, but a majority of them are done in these cities where, A, they have the most restrictive gun laws, and it's because of gang violence. And then they use that to push legislation to further restrict my rights. And those are my concerns.
Representative Abdul Samad, you're a legislator. You're a lawmaker here. Can you understand Nathan Gibson's position that he just doesn't agree with a lot of the premises that are the lens through which this problem is being used? He thinks unjustly.
Well, no, and Nathan and I agree with that. We're actually in agreement. The key with data is that you don't want data used to do a one-shoe-fits-all, you know, and you don't want it to point out into some areas that need to be addressed. When you talk about suicide, you're talking about something that is totally different from the guns that are on the street that are causing the violence and the death to babies. You know, when you talk about gun violence and, you know, you're talking the difference between an individual with some mental health problems walking into a school and shooting children and then someone committing suicide. That's why, you know, there's no silver bullet to it. But these are the conversations like we're having today. Not only do we have to have, but we have to take, you know, the researchers, we have to take Nathan, we have to take myself and others into the community and have these discussions so that we can put this, you know, on the right track. Mm-hmm. Because the last thing you want to be able to say, you know, is that, yeah, you know, the statistic that Nathan just gave about, you know, the 55, you know, the homicides that, deaths that took place and then just one by a rifle, that still doesn't talk about the drive-by shooting that we had the other day. That still doesn't talk about the police shootings that are taking place. That still doesn't talk about a young man who is trying to help his client and laying on the street with his hands in the air and he gets shot, you know, and then he asks, why did you shoot me? And he's told, I don't know. You know, we have to narrow this to the point of saying, what are we really talking about? And then we have to look at what are the solutions in the different areas that we're talking about, you know, guns being used.
Do you think we're capable of doing that in this political atmosphere?
I don't think we had the luxury not to do it. You know, I think to the point is individuals have to stand up for what matters. We don't have the luxury to continue to, you know, have this us and them battle. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to begin to get with individuals that are willing to look for solutions to be able to do that because we're losing. We're losing children. We're losing children, whether it's a gunman walking into a school. We're losing lives, whether it's an individual that barricade themselves now to shoot at police or whether an individual, you know, themselves are being shot because of innocent. You know, these are the things that we have to look at, you know. And I think that because of social media, a lot of this is being brought to attention, especially when we're dealing with African-American males. You know, when we're dealing with the situation at hand, we have to sit down and realistically go to war against gun violence.
Mm-hmm. We've been talking a lot about statistics this hour, 200 gun deaths in Iowa, for instance, many thousands, tens of thousands in the United States when we enlarge that picture. Just one death is such a tragedy, and it's just been over just a year since there was a gun death, highly reported, of Andrea Farrington in Coralville. John Lundell, the mayor of Coralville, with us this hour. If you've just joined us, she was shot, killed at the Coral Ridge Mall. A staff member, someone who worked at the Children's Museum at the Coral Ridge Mall 2 weeks before her 21st birthday, I believe. As mayor, as a council member, tell us about the impact. We've got the family impacted. We've got an entire community impacted.
Absolutely. It was phenomenal, the impact on the community. I've been an elected official in Coralville for over 13 and a half years, and it touched me as it did the whole community much deeper than anything else. I've heard a lot of emotional pleas during those years, but nothing to the extent that this single death caused the community. And it was very troubling. And it was, having to being asked to speak at Andrea's memorial service that Sunday morning. The shooting was Friday evening, and Sunday morning they had a memorial service. It was just devastating for me to come up with the words that to represent the city and, mm-hmm. and speak on behalf of the city. But
how would you describe the change in the community over a year yeah. after that death?
Well, initially, I think time does heal, and that. But we can't use that as an excuse not to stay on top and keep this from happening again. But initially, I was, I had many citizens say they just no longer felt safe in that mall anymore, and that was very sad to me. I could understand, but it was very, very troubling to me that this single incident would make them feel that way. And it shows the importance of life and how we need to make every step, learn from it and keep something like that from happening again. It wasn't a random shooting. It was a romantic relationship, at least one direction. And it was a very targeted incident. But
for someone determined to get a gun, is there any legislation, any law that can stop them?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that a question?
Well, that's true. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let me have you talk, Representative Abdul Samad. You, after the death of your son due to gun violence in 1997, you founded a nonprofit organization that addresses the use of drugs, gang violence, and crime involving at-risk youth. It's called Creative Visions. How does that fit into this picture of getting to a better place? You've been dealing with this for a very long time.
Yes. One of the things that just for a point of clarification, Creative Visions was started a year before the death of my son.
Oh, okay.
It actually, with the death of my son, it made me question, the methods, what we were doing and where we were at, as far as gun violence. One of the things that we did, I actually worked at an organization called Urban Dreams in Des Moines. Urban Dreams, we got together with the city and the YMCA, and we created a program called the Downtown Teen Program because at that time there was an increase of gun violence, there was an increase of drugs, and an increase of gang activity. We were able, with the Downtown Teen Program, which we called it, was able to bring all those factions together on the weekend, a Friday and Saturday night, to be able to not only give them an opportunity of being able to do something recreational, but it gave us an opportunity to do some education with them and also listen to them and talk with them and not at them. But it also, Ben, gave us an opportunity to be able to institute, some real conversation. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen that happen again since that program. And I've traveled across this country and, talked with mothers and others, to say, how do you turn your pain into power? You see Trayvon Martin's mother and other mothers that are coming together speaking against it, but we're not implementing programs to address this issue. And, just like Nathan takes his child and does, you have a father that's interested in teaching and educating the children. We have so many single mothers, so many single families. They don't have time to be educating their children about guns, even though they wake up every morning and scared to go somewhere. What happened in Coralville, with the state of Iowa should have took that, and used it as an opportunity to have something that was ongoing. Instead of, again, it happens and we have a memorial, we have marches that take place, but we don't implement programming. And even to the point of the laws, let's look at our laws that aren't being enforced, but let's look at what we can enforce and new laws to prevent the what's happening today.
Okay, let me end. We have about a minute left. Bindu Kalesan here, our a national researcher who studied gun culture and gun legislation at Boston University. Do you worry that your research that you've done up to this point and will do in the future won't make much difference because a lot of the things that may come up as possible remedies just are not politically feasible in our gun culture?
Well, that is a question that we could ask, or what we could do is, how much look at other programs, other public health victories where we have actually affected a very strong change. Like, for example, the smoking campaigns, right? So the public health has really done something very remarkable there. So I think what has happened today is that few people from different different backgrounds have come together, and I'm very interested in this. You know, there's Nathan representing really social gun culture, and he has his own concerns, and there's the mayor who has kind of a perspective based on the public health personnel. And also, we have Abdul Samad, who is a gun violence survivor. And this kind of public health, I consider this as a public health conversation, which has started. And I have learned a whole lot more. This is the reason why we also study public social gun culture, so that we can have a cohesive solution instead of fighting each other. And you know, a few things which I think is important to understand.
Just a few seconds left. I'm sorry, Bindu.
Yeah, we have to prioritize as well, right? So we're coming from different corners, but it's good so that we can come together and prioritize our concerns. We do have the highest burden in suicides in Iowa, which needs to be taken care of first.
Thank you very much for joining us. Bindu Kalaisan is an assistant professor in the Department of Medicine at Boston University. John Lundell, mayor of Coralville, retired deputy director of the Injury Prevention Research Center at the University of Iowa. Nathan Gibson, thank you for coming in and joining us. And Representative Akeo Abdul Samad, always nice to have you on the program as well. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Such an expansive conversation to try to fit into an hour. Sorry for those who perhaps called or emailed and didn't get your input on our program. River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury, with help from Lauren Knutson. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.